Welcome to Success Unlimited with America's success thought leaders, Tim and Tom Simmons. This podcast is dedicated to exploring the journeys of thought leaders, business leaders, authors, speakers, podcasters, and various individuals' journeys to success and the challenges they had to overcome along the way. We are very thankful that you decided to listen in to our podcast. Like and subscribe to Success Unlimited's podcast and socials to receive updates when new episodes are released. Do you have an idea of who you'd like to hear? Let us know by commenting on our socials or by emailing info@mymentorhq.co. Now, we hope you enjoy this episode of Success Unlimited.
And welcome to Success Unlimited. With us today, we have Zachary Coleman. Zach, welcome to Success Unlimited podcast. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to kind of start this podcast and this episode off by explaining what it is that you do. I guess you're the founder of Creative and GymMark. So what is GymMark?
GymMark is really an agency for thriving gyms. It really comes down to gyms that are kind of at that stage, what I like to call the stage three of gym ownership, and or stage four, where they're making, you know, 500 to a million, or they're making 1 million to 3 million in expansion mode. And they're just kind of at a place where they're starting to realize what got them here isn't going to get them there. You know, it's the whole concept of, hey, we have marketing fatigue. What we did to bring in our existing members isn't working. How do we start shifting their mindset towards people, culture, branding, positioning, types of scenarios, and building momentum off of that, helping them build momentum, not just with their team, and doing a done with you style consulting and implementation style system, but also helping them with some of those more warm marketing types approaches that they don't necessarily need to bring someone in for, from a technical standpoint, but they can have a marketing team behind them to help them build that momentum and grow a little bit more locally, depending on how many locations they have.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So you do all the SEO, the digital brand, digital assets, promotion, and kind of helping that gym owner increase the revenue, increase the profitability, increase the community awareness that they exist and where they are.
Yeah, really kind of help them build a more sustainable lead flow. I think that in today's society, you know, especially with everything that we have digital right now, that we need to get back to the basics of some form of people, right? I think that especially gyms, now that, you know, the situation is over in 2020. We're going through a time right now it's very similar to the 2010 era of Web 3.0, right? Print kind of went out the window. Everything was going digital. I think now with everyone coming in and working from home and or, you know, gyms starting to ramp back up, people just need experiences. They need a community, and gyms are the perfect opportunity to kind of take what used to work in the past and really utilize certain tactics and not just the marketing side of things, but understanding how they can really evolve their gym more off of people instead of off of, you know, clicks.
Awesome. And you mentioned in your first in the intro, stages. What are stages? Is it a level of revenues for a gym?
Yeah, I've just seen, you know, I've been in business for years. You know, I'm in marketing. I've had to go through my own valley of death, my own periods of like what works here, what works there. When working through my original agency, my first agency, Creative, you know, we were working with gyms, we were working with professional athletes, we were working with a plethora of athletic companies. And when we were working with the gyms, we just started seeing this trend. It's a very similar trend that a lot of businesses go through, but I've been able to correlate certain stages with gyms based off of what I see in the marketplace and what I see off of just the amount of income they bring in from their locations, right? And so And when's that validation point over? When is the time to start pushing their gym to the next stage? What's going to get them there? And so stage one and two of ownership, very common. You have, you know, startup and then validation phase. You know, those are the first two phases. And that's, you know, I think most businesses, you'd say around the 250 mark, you know, for gyms, because they have higher expenses, I'd say it's between the 250 and 500K mark. So stage three of gym ownership, it's really like 500 to a million. They're trying to get to that million, but they really don't know how to get past that valley of death period. They're like, oh, we're bringing in, we're spraying the wall. We may have multiple people in house, just cold calling people in our area from a marketing perspective. We're not getting any sales. Our challenges aren't really working. There's a whole bunch of plethora of things that can happen. And a lot of that really comes down to, they're just not positioned. They're just not at the point where they're like, hey, let's really focus on what we do best, and really dive into bringing in an ideal clientele for our specific gym. And not just from a client perspective, but from an employee perspective, really starting to focus on, what do we value? What do I as a leader value as an owner? And start taking those values and start portraying them and becoming a leader instead of a delegator, and starting to bring on higher retention within the gym as an employee standpoint, but also from a community standpoint, being able to bring in clients that can kind of be, or members that can start being their advocates, so they can lower their churn rate. And I mean, because that's their main metric, right? Is really at the end of the day, they need to stop looking at, anyone can get leads. I think anyone can get business. I think it really comes down to, can you get quality business, right? Can you get business that's going to actually help you make it to the next level, be sustainable? And so that's the challenge. And so that's really the stage three. Stage four, I would say, is, you know, 1 to 3 million, which is what I usually recommend for a gym that's trying to expand and open a second location. I've seen plethora of gyms try to branch out and open a second location, and just be due to the amount of expenses that a lot of these brick and mortar businesses have. I would say that if you're making under a million and you're not, and you're expanding, you've expanded. I mean, you could be at 900, you know, depending, but that's just the common number I see for a healthy gym that's looking to expand. And so that's kind of the area where, yeah, they need to start focusing not just on leadership, but now they have multiple locations. They need to communicate that, you know, that leadership too. They have to start having consistency within their, with their marketing efforts and their design efforts, and making sure that they're basically duplicating things amongst. Stage five, I'd say, could be a franchise, or you're having more than four to five locations. It's when you really have to start thinking, that's when you should start thinking bigger, and starting to really automate your marketing, and you're looking at it for more of your marketing agency type situation, not a gym owner, if that makes sense, or a commercial real estate agent, whatever you prefer.
It does. And so something I'm aware of, and I don't know a whole lot about the gym market from a business perspective, but I know gyms have a really high failure rate, and they have a really high churn rate, which is, and they make, I think, want to say 90% of their projected revenue is all done in week one of every year, January 1, right? The New Year's resolution crowd that comes in, they sign up on a New Year's special. They go for 3 weeks and then they drop off and they're non-existent. Maybe they might come back once or twice throughout the year, but that's basically it. Then you have the lifers that are in there every morning for, you know, the gym rats, right? And they're for 3 hours a day, et cetera. So what is a failure rate of a gym and the average churn rate? What do you see?
The average churn rate, I would say average, is around 8 to 10%. And so they do, to get that lower, there's a plethora of gyms that can get that a lot lower. I mean, I think that once you start getting into the big box style gyms where you have multiple locations and you can start lowering your prices because you're making more income off real estate than you are off the actual consumer, it's a lot easier because people will just ignore a $20 a month membership, right? And so that's kind of their game plan at that point, is let's just get as many people in as possible. But when you're at stage three and four, The biggest thing that I see is exactly what you said. They focus on these Facebook challenges. They try to get people in from Facebook challenges. They try to, they don't really take advantage of certain things. And I'll get into that in a second. But it's the fact that they're still focusing on the spray the wall effect. They're not really qualifying the types of people, and they're trying to bring people in easy instead of focusing on, hey, how do we provide an experience for these people through everything that we do? I'm a big component of, your website and your brand from a visual positioning and a positioning standpoint. That experience needs to match the experience of inside the gym. And so there are certain tactics they can do, but what I've seen, even not just with gyms, with chiropractors, with physical therapists, with anyone I talk to, it's always the same thing. They're always trying these gimmicky things online. And I'm not saying they're all bad, but they're trying 80 different things online. Let's just bring 100, 200 leads in. And I'm like, well, what's your close rate? And they're like, 10, 15%. And I'm like, what about your walk-ins? What about the people that call you on the phone and ask you questions? And they're like, that's around 50. I'm like, well, then why are you focusing on this tactic of trying to bring a million people in when you could just focus on a handful? You can let go of sales reps or people that are making these outgoing calls, save money there. And you can really just focus on providing the best customer experience you can and making sure that you're providing a safe place / community and experience where people are at home and they're at the point where they're like, I need to find a place for me. I need to find a place where I can go for 1-2 hours a day and I can feel like I'm part of a community. If you be able, and it's really that simple. I mean, I tell prospects all the time, I'm like, stop focusing on 80 different marketing tactics. You just focus on great customer service and you're number one on Google and your reputation shows. Human psychology, people are going to want to go to the closest place to their house. They'll go a little bit further if they, better reviews, better place for people to better experience. And that's just how it works. I'll pay more money for a gym membership if I feel like I'm having a place where I'm not sitting there waiting for 25 minutes because some dude with his pants and his t-shirt are on just chatting away on their phone while I'm trying to work out. I'm like, I want to be around a community. I want to be around like-minded people within the team and the other people that are going to that gym. And so that's really the things that can actually lower churn rate. Now, just to go a little bit deeper on this, and I'll give an example here. I don't know if many people will get this example, but about 5 or 6 years ago, there was this huge thing on, we'll just say online platforms, especially video games, instant transactions, tokens, things like that. People hated it. As of recent, I have seen a lot of games do this situation, which is trust oriented, right? It's like, hey, we're going to release this game. And then throughout the year, no, we're not going to charge you for the additions. We're just going to put them on. And I'll let everyone know, I'm not really a gamer. I have 3 kids now, so I don't really play games. I just don't have time. But I've seen this. Being in marketing, I've seen this, right? Where it's like, oh, you're going to keep a client longer. And even if they only have to purchase the game once, you're going to keep them on for longer. And you're playing the long game to get them to be your advocates to either buy the next game or tell their friends and their family about how great this game was. So when the next one comes out, you have more people. Right. And so that's how I use that example, because that's really what people should be using, especially in the gym space, should be using their digital marketing for. They should be focusing much more on trust. They should be focusing much more on building reputation and providing value experiences through content, through different things for their existing members, not for new members. You'll get new members from this content, yes, but what it will end up doing is we'll end up helping you keep people engaged and people like, I found this keto recipe on our gym's website. Like I'm going to do it. Or I found this workout I'm going to try out. Like, start doing things to build that trust from outside the gym. And the best way to do that is just to try to provide the best experience you can from both. And that's what's going to keep people longer. That's what's going to build that, that advocacy so that your members start bringing in more members. Why don't gyms do this? Well, simple. Branding doesn't have a KPI metric. You can't go in and say, hey, I made $200,000. I just had a gym last week where he was like, hey, we're going through his SEO and his stats are all up. His stats are all up by tenfold. And he's like, yeah, you know, we doubled revenue last year. He's like, we doubled revenue. And coincidentally, we've been working with him for about a year and a half. And he's like, we doubled, we're doing great. But he's just like, but we can't contribute it to your SEO because a gym shut down the street. We had to, you know, and a lot of them came here. And he's like, I can't track it and know that that came from your sources. I'm like, you started with us a year and a half ago and now you're double up revenue. And now you're saying that you don't think that the stuff we're doing is contributing. I'm like, here are the numbers, but yeah, I agree with you. Like you can't count that, but I will tell you that 95% of those people, the first thing that they did is went to Google and found another gym local to them. They found you. They looked at your experience, right. What you provide from a customer experience.
That's that branding.
Yeah. And so those are the types of things that companies, gyms in particular, have a much, and I'll be real with you, branding has not been utilized in the gym space a great amount. You know, you have your exhibit design and your experience, but anything outside of trying to make the gym look pretty compared, which all of them almost look the same, especially the big box gyms, but trying to give it this experience within their visuals, within their messaging, within everything that they do, they don't, because they just don't have that much of a budget, you know? And so they don't get the opportunity to create these great brands or these great situations, just like, you know, SaaS companies do, for instance, that are able to throw out $100,000. Do they need to create something that great? I would say yes. Do they need to really take time to be like, what experience can I provide? And not just looking at a logo or something that some kid down the street made just because they want to throw it up. I mean, to start out, yeah, do that. You have no money. I get it. But once you get to a certain point, you need to start thinking about those experiences.
So something we talked about when you first jumped on here was niching down. And I think it's interesting. We talk about branding and then the gyms. Like if you're known for throwing a sign up and old school and here are the real metal weights, and it's not a pretty look, you know, feel good type gym. You come in, you work out, and you go home, versus maybe more of like a Lifetime Fitness or a Planet Fitness. And you talk about the brand, the experience, what someone expects. But that's all part of branding. But from a general business branding, you talked about how you worked with athletes and you did gyms and you did, you know, other things, and you're in the process now of niching down and you're focusing on stage three, stage four, stage five, gyms. And you've identified your target market, identified who you're best served to help. So I thought it was really interesting, the correlation that you're making about gyms and their success rates and how to reduce the churn rate with them niching down their marketing efforts from spraying against the wall to focusing on what's working. And that same principle I feel is universal across all businesses, across all industries, identifying what you do well and do it well and execute, right? So when you're talking about niching down your business, what caused you to niche down? Like,
this is a long story. I don't know if we have all day here, but I saw very correlations in my business. You know, when I started out after leaving the corporate world, you know, I worked for large companies like the Suns as a creative director. I worked for Pearson and on the education side and helping students. And when I started growing my gym, my agency, I was doing something very similar, right? I had to say, all right, I just need business right now. So I just need to be able to make a living, make income. I think it's inevitable for most people. I actually think it's smart that people don't niche when they're first starting, because they need to find certain things that they're good at, certain things they want, even if they think they're great at something. And then I got to a point, and it was about a 2 to 3 year transformation. You know, I think 2020 really put a situation. I was growing 20% year over year up to that point, and I was doing great. And then 2021 hit, and of course, right after, I couldn't get the whatchamacallit money. But like, two of my clients were like, "Hey, we're not leaving, but we have to drop, you know, all of our spend." I had about a 20 common agency situation is the 80-20 rule. You get one client that's paying a majority of the bills, and that's what was kind of happening to me. And so I had a couple clients drop down, and just over the years, as I've been trying to grow my team and build stability, I'm just like, dude, we're doing too much. Like, even with six services, and some of them are very small, I'm like I have to hire, like, if you really want to bring in those A players, they need to have a position. But when you're smaller, you can't bring in those types of people. You have to bring in people that are hybrids. And so it was very hard for us to really gain traction and find out what marketing direction. So I thought I niched. I was really focused on athletic driven individuals. So we had gyms, we had athletes. And I still work with the athletes. I think branding, there's a process within branding. It's good not to know everything about a company. And so our main company still will work and create custom solutions for people, but they're just more expensive, right? I couldn't do that for a gym. So what was happening was we were bringing in a whole bunch of these personal brands, a whole bunch of these athletes, but every single one of them wanted a different business model. You know, it was either e-commerce, they wanted to be a speaker, they wanted to open a gym, funny enough, they wanted to do different things. And I'm like, well, I don't have the capabilities to become a master at all of these things. And so just over time, just still trying to work with some of our older clients and trying to do this pivot, I just got to a point personally where I was burnt out. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I was a delegator more than I was a leader. And so I was set myself down a path. I'm like, what's the scariest thing for me to do to try to help get this to the next level? And so I saw that correlation, that valley of death from the agency standpoint that I saw from some of the gyms that we work with. And I'm like, ah, you know, like, so it's been a slow transformation. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't happen overnight, but I think that niching down is not going to be it's not what they say. I don't care what anyone said. The riches are in the niches. I don't agree with that at all. It's just as hard to grow a niche. It's just a lot easier for you to start building momentum.
Yeah. That's really, you're dropping some gold right there. If I could summarize, is starting off, spray the wall, bring in volume, find out what you're good at, identify it, and then niche down. And when you thought you were niching down, you didn't niche down enough. And then as you refined, you kept niching down further and further and further until you finally got to the point where you're like, this is what I do. Here's what I'm good at. And here's how we do it.
Well, here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. So I was kind of at this point, and I just realized this about 4 months ago. I was like in this middle ground. I wasn't niched enough to get a certain niche, but I was niched enough where whenever all these companies would come in, they're like, oh, you only work with athletic companies, you know? And so it was like, what's going on here? And so I do enjoy working with a plethora of different companies. I do, but at the end of the day, you know, it was exhausting. I had to go back and look. I think it really came down to me. It really came down to me looking back and saying, hey, I have to find a way to connect with myself again and find out what success looks like to me, because I had money in the bank, you know, and not to toot my own horn, but I could retire tomorrow. I'm at the point where I could retire tomorrow and I could probably go to the Bahamas for 5-10 years and I'd be good to go. But money wasn't a successing factor for me. So it was a mental thing. I think the mental side plays a huge part during a certain phase of the valley of death of realizing that, hey, this isn't all about me in making money. It's not about being seen. It's not about being heard for this invisible number that's in my bank account. It's about me being able to help other people and me being able to figure out what's the best way I can do that. And so I have to figure that out. I had to connect with myself. And though I still love working with athletes, my dad was is a retired NFL player way before I was born. But so I didn't really get to be too involved with it. But I heard the stories. And so I love working with athletes, and I still do. But at the end of the day, the gyms were my jam. You know, they were the place. The gym is my place where I go to work on my mental health. I've known quite a few people in the industry. And so I was like, all right, well, me connecting with myself and being able to figure out what I truly valued, I was able to kind of take a step back and say, all right, like, this is what I need to do.
So you talk about some of the success you've had. How would you define success? Part one, how would you define it? And part two, what are you most proud of? What are some of your more successful moments? You can look back and say, hey, I was at the mountaintop right there.
I'm going to relay this to a story, and I'm not going to give the person's name out, because I don't want their significant other to watch this and get upset with me. But so there was a story that was someone I know told me a few months ago, and they're going through a hectic breakup. And their ex-husband, he was very big on working. He was very big on, we need to lead by example. I need to watch my our kids. He was working 15, 16 hour days. Just like, this is what we need to show our kids, work ethic. And I looked at it and I was like, man, that's who I would have became if I didn't take a step back and really look at what really is success for me. I have three kids. I love my kids. My business used to be my life. It used to be my baby, is what I say, but things changed. My kids are now what the most important thing to me. And you get a different light. So I had like three correlations all at once. And so there was a lot going on in my head. And being present around my family, being able to work back to the grit that we kind of talked about before the podcast, being able to really look at myself and say, hey, it's not about working 15 hour days. It's about me working six solid hours, having time for personal time, because I think having good personal time is actually a great KPI for building a successful business. Being able to take time out with my family and be present around them, to me, and of course, money is still going to be there. But I think that at the end of the day, it's just not 100% my priority anymore. You know, I'm all about the family. I'm all about, hey, I'd rather have a million-dollar business than have that, and that runs smoothly, and I can provide great value, than say I'm going to thrive for a $1 billion business and be not home ever and not enjoy the fruits of my labor, you know? And so that's what success, I think, looks like to me in the long run, is really just being able to stay grounded and know there's more things to life than the business, which, and funny enough, actually makes the business run better.
This, I guess, in a macro setting, I mean, I love that. I love the values. I love the thought process of putting family first, because you have a strong home life. You have a strong support system that'll only further fuel your successes in business and your professional and in your career. And I know for me, I'm not quite there yet. I love business, and I have this business and that business and this business, and I love business, but I still, every morning I'm getting my kids up. That's one of my things. And I'm reading the stories at night, putting them to bed. That's one of my things, and try to spend some quality time with the wife every evening. Mm-hmm. So it is, what you're saying rings true, and it's so, so true.
Well, and I'll be first to say that I'm not perfect either. Like, I think it's very easy in today's society to continue to see all these people that are doing better than you from a money standpoint. I mean, it's everywhere. And so you're always like, oh, how do I get there? How do I get there? How do I get there? And it's really every day you just have to find a way to take a step back and enjoy the present. And so it is an ongoing effort to build that connection. I would say for the people that don't have family yet, like, you see a lot of really high end people that are like, I don't have a family. I choose not to have a family. My business is my thing. Okay, great. Then build a solid group of connections that mean that to you. Like, right. And that's where the community comes in, right? That's where like gyms could start hiring, not family, but having a good team and a good support around them, having a good association or having something that can, they can feel like, you know, can help them get through some of those connection issues that they have.
Yeah. And I think it really comes down to how everyone defines success. I mean, there are some folks that I've interviewed and they're like, I want that $3 million house. And, you know, 2 years ago, it was $1 million house, but inflation, so we'll call it $3 million. I want that Lambo. I want that Ferrari. While others, they have a 9-to-5 job and they are happy being in their 9-to-5, knowing they're home at 5. They have the whole evening. They have the weekends off. They have 2 weeks of paid vacay. And it comes down to how each person identifies and defines their success. So you mentioned your family is something you are most proud of, and having the time and the freedom to have and I guess have those experiences with family. How important has it been to have their support of your business?
I think it's very important. I think being I think you would agree with me on this, and anyone on here that's watching that's an entrepreneur / business owner would. It's a different beast, you know. My wife has no idea the things that go through my head, the ups, the downs, the situation. She, you know, there are certain times like she'll be like, "Come out here and help me with this," and I'll be like, "You just that takes an hour out of my day, right?" So, you need those people that have some sort of understanding of business to be able to work with and talk with. I think you always do. I think it helps seeing other people going through the same thing. If you have a significant other that's part of the business, I'm not a big fan of partnering with family or friends, but some do it great. Some have it and they can do it. And so I think it's been very important for me. My wife has been very understanding, of certain things I need to do in certain times. She does rant at me sometimes over certain things, and I wish she understood a little bit more, but you can only get what you can get out of the situation. But it's been very important to me, I think, especially at this stage of my life. I think that it's the biggest takeaway I can tell anyone is probably you're going to go through stages in your business and your personal evolution where you're going to change. That success of having that $3 million house, I want a $3 million house. I'm not saying I don't, but it's not like it doesn't define me. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I want to build, I want a great place to do this. I want, create this huge studio. Like there's a lot of stuff that I want to do. Still, I want to actually, Gym Mark's going to evolve into a large commercial style, B2B style gym is kind of the vision of it. And so there's a lot of things I still have plans and vision for the company, right, and for myself and stuff like that. But my success, I've seen it tenfold. I think it's very common to look at mindset for instance, having a mindset shift and understanding certain things. I think that happens in time. I think it's part of the business owner evolution when it comes to the personal side. And so I would say out of everything that you said, the most important thing for people to take away would be it's okay to shift your mindset. It's okay. I like to say it's a personal rebrand. That's kind of my thing. Like you're going through a personal rebrand right now. And that's totally fine because it's going to happen. You're going to get there. And if you don't, you're probably just going to have to come to the realization that you're okay staying with where you're at.
Being content. So two things that came to mind. If someone who is listening to this podcast has a spouse and they're not in business with you, and you're an entrepreneur just starting out, or even if you're not starting out and you're working 80-100 plus hours a week, pick up the book. And both spouses, partner needs to read for better or for work. It explains the nuances between an entrepreneur and their spouse and the feelings associated with that spouse working 24/7. is a phenomenal relationship book for entrepreneurs. But something else you mentioned, that the money, the house doesn't define you. And a quote came to mind is, money magnifies who you already are as a person. Mm-hmm. And if you're a selfish, greedy, rude person before money, and you get money, you'll be a larger, selfish, rude person with more money. But if you're a charitable, giving, conscientious, great individual, you're going to be a great individual, even greater with money. So I think it's so important to, I guess, not let all that define that, define who you are.
Well, and just to point out on your second point there, I think that that mindset and who you are and the things that you take away and do, you are a brand, you know, as a business owner. And I will be the first to say that, and I mean, kind of my superpower, I think, being in marketing, is I can look at a business just from top level, and the way they do their marketing, the way they push certain people. And I'm not saying I'm 100% accurate, but I'm like, oh, that's the type of person you are. You know, and so you can kind of see the inner workings. The way you portray yourself is going to push amongst how you hire team, how you do your work, how you provide. And so if you're greedy, if you're a greedy individual and you're like, I just want that $3 million car, why would I give you money? Because I know for a fact I'm just giving you money so you can buy that car, not because you want to do valued work for me. And so that's just who I am and what I think. I'm not saying that's 100% accurate for all people, but I think that those are the types of things that you have to think about when you're evolving yourself and you're trying to grow as an individual.
Well said. Last question for you. I ask this is usually one of the last questions I ask is, if you could think of one person, either from any point in the past or anywhere in the present, that you could take to dinner, who would that be and what would you talk about?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I could come up with some philosopher like Neil Tyson and be like, oh, I want to, you know, I've always been a big geeky fan of like aliens and like what's out there in the future and stuff like that. I could say something like that. But funny enough, my wife asked me this question the other day, and the first thing that came to mind was Seth MacFarlane. And I was like, that's an interesting choice. Seth MacFarlane, you know, the guy that the Family Guy and stuff like that. And I'm like, why would I choose him? And I realized it was because I wouldn't have to be serious. I could just have fun and I could laugh and we could have a good time and I could enjoy the present of being around his company. And I think that that's going to be my choice. I think Seth MacFarlane, I'm going to go the funny route here and that route and say someone that can just make me laugh.
That's a great attribute for anybody to have. But that's the first time anyone has said Seth Farland, and the first time anyone is on the show that someone has said that's why they would take someone to dinner, just to have a good time, because it would make them laugh. I love that answer. Well, Zach, thank you so much for being on the Success Unlimited podcast. I love the mindset. Wish you the best of luck in the future endeavor and the growth of Jim Mark. And it was great speaking with you.
Thank you. I really do appreciate it.
So, all right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed today's interview. Every week we release two new episodes. Remember to follow Success Unlimited's podcast wherever you listen. Thanks again for listening in.